FNR, Football Nation Radio. Culture Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome everyone, live across Australia. This is FNR Football Nation Radio, Australia's first and only 24-hour radio station dedicated to the beautiful game of football. I'm Carlos Alberto Diego and this is Culture Cafe, the only breakfast show dedicated to football across this wonderful nation. We are your voice of football in this country, so join the conversation anytime today on 9944 9999. That's 9944 9999. 03 outside Melbourne and plus 613 if you're overseas. You can also SMS us with your thoughts and comments on 0428 933 345, 0428 933 345. Our best caller and SMSs will win a premium packaged Panettone from our great friends there at Ital. So give us a call on any of our live shows today, even on Calcio Cafe this morning, and we'll have a great discussion about the game. Coming up in this hour in the cafe, In Power and the Passion, we catch up with James Lambert, Technical Director of Deaf Football Australia. We chat to Fox football commentator and former Matilda Sarah Walsh on all things women's football. In Club Corner, we travel to Tasmania and chat to Alistair Ollington, president of the Ulverstone Football Club. And we also catch up with Mike Barrett, founder of a groundbreaking digital platform that's out there at the moment, Sports Host. So plenty to get through today, and there's much, much more. So let's get into it.
You are really seeing the most extraordinary finish here.
FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Yes, yesterday I caught up with James Lambert, Technical Director of Deaf Football Australia, and talked about the program, talked about the game. I've got to say, I was very educated, wasn't very educated about deaf football in Australia until I had a chat to James, and I'm kind of hoping that you guys will be further educated too and get something out of this. Thanks for joining us, James. Tell us about Deaf Football Australia, its programs, how many teams are associated with the organisation, and how long it's been running.
So Deaf Football Australia is basically a national team. So we have to find players around the country who are playing, you know, local football, and try and identify and find players who can play for the national team. So at the moment, that takes up a lot of our time. So it's difficult for us to run other teams, or in other countries like in the UK, Europe, there's, you know, Man United have a deaf team. But in Australia, at this point, we don't have deaf teams with the early clubs and things like that. So we basically have to find players ourselves and try and build, introduce players to training camps, and try to build that squad and teach them how to play the game, because they've got various levels of ability, because a lot of the boys play in association football.
So, James, how did you get involved in this type of football?
I was introduced to Robbie Stanton, who's Sydney FC's National Youth League coach, and Robbie had been involved with deaf football for about 8 years to this day as the head coach. When he came on board, we were getting beat by quite big scores. Him and Abbaside both worked together, and it was basically survival football. So Robert changed the mentality of how we play the game, and obviously at the time the curriculum came in and there was a national approach to playing more proactive football. So he did that, and a couple of years ago I met Robbie for the first time, so 2 or 3 years ago, and I've got a pro license, so I'm more in my roles have always been technical directing, and Robbie's more like a performance coach. So we got together, and we started to evolve the way we work with the players and the way we find players. And so we've just changed the model and got more people working.
So for those who are not up to speed with deaf football, can you give us an idea of the rules that the players play under, the level of hearing impairment of the players who participate in this type of football also?
Well, it's deaf football, but basically the players are hearing impaired. So it's 50% hearing loss in both ears as a minimum. So that makes it difficult in the sense of teaching them, because we may have 2 or 3 players who are totally deaf and they need sign language. And we have other players who were born got hearing aids early in their life and have never needed sign language.
Mm.
So at the moment, to actually go into what the best method of teaching and teaching the players to play at an high level, which we want them to do, it's difficult, and that's what we're going through at the moment, to try and standardise. We've simplified the football language, so now we do a lot of back end of online learning to explain what a simple sign means. It could mean an awful lot, and we teach the sign language. But in our camp, we involved all coaches because we also believe, and through some assessments of our players, some surveys we did with them, we realised that a lot of the boys are visual and kinesthetic in the way they want to learn. So they want to do to learn. So, and that was the same with the coaches. So in the last camp, we introduced about 15 different terminologies or words, and everybody had to learn the words. We did it as we were going through the camp, rather than it was just the best way, doing it in the middle of the training session, asking coaches to intervene and provide information. So that's where we're at. So even the coaches are learning, myself and Robbie are learning, some of the players are learning for the first time, and some of the deaf players, they're appreciating the fact that we're trying to help them understand as well.
So are the rules modified at all on the pitch?
No, not at all. Only that on a competitive game, the boys are not allowed to wear hearing aids.
Mm.
So it changes. And that would be something which I've been searching for, someone who's got expertise in understanding how that changes the way they perform. Because we find they can, without the hearing aids, of course, the communication drops, but the sometimes the coordination and movement also is impacted as well. So it's a difficult one. In training, we've sometimes pondered if we should train without hearing aids, but we've got so much to teach them, it's difficult to go through that process. So the only thing what looks different is around the field in international games, you have a lot of people with flags. So when the referee blows his whistle, around the field people wear flags so that the player knows that the referee's blown his whistle.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the officiating during the game. Does the referee could be, obviously it can be hearing impaired also, but the communication between a referee and the players, is that sometimes get a little bit complicated?
I don't think the referees are hearing, they don't use the hearing impaired referees, but I think the referees just treat the game as normal, and if a whistle's blown, then by having the extra people around the field waving flags, and the players stop. Of course, the players can't argue a decision, or they may get frustrated, but it just tends to be normal for a referee, and he's got that support around him to help him inform the players that he's blown his whistle.
So you're a national team, obviously. So we've got the Socceroos, we've got the Matildas, we've got the Pararoos with the disability football. What's your nickname?
Do you know what? I don't think we've got one. I don't think we've got one. I will say this about the FFA. Like, the FFA supporters, they provide us with all the clothing, and Luke Cassidy, the head of performance, is always communicating with us to find out what we're up to, what we're doing. He visited us to watch our last game. So while we're not under their banner in the sense that they give us their support, but we're probably not in the sense if you go on their website, we're not on there. Maybe that's something we'd like to change in the future. But the FFA have been very good to us, and they're always supporters and showing interest in us. And you know, so that's been a good positive over the last few years.
So tell us about the standard of international competition, and whereabouts in the rankings do Australia come in world competition?
So my experience of an international tournament was 2 years ago in qualifiers for the Olympics. We played against Iran and Japan, and Iran had not been beaten in Asia in 8 years. Previously, we'd been beat by big scores. We ended up losing 4-0 against them. And me and Robbie would probably say that Iranian team, given that some of the players we believe had got hearing impairment through the war, so previously they were hearing players.
Mm.
So the quality, I would think that that team would compete in NPL. So if you put it in them terms, you sort of, the Australian team at the moment is a collection of association players who are having to go into international tournaments to play against, you know, an half decent NPL team, which is tough. And the other thing, what is different to the NPL is, if you play Japan, they've got a completely different playing style to Iran.
Yeah.
Very technical players, very similar to what the Japanese national teams are like. Very playing tight areas, very technical. Iran were very physically strong and mobile. And Korea, for instance, they have a lot of support from their national body, in the sense of a lot of their coaches are from their national setup. Most coaches involved are A licensed or pro licensed coaches, because you're playing the same game. There's no restrictions. The brand of football, how we teach the players, is exactly the same as how you would teach anything at international level.
And do you have any, whether it's Australian player or any of these Asian players, are they playing in professional competition, any of these guys?
I believe Turkey have been world champions. Have dominated over the last 10 or 15 years, and Turkey, I believe a lot of their players play in Division 2 in Turkey. So yeah, there's a mixture of players who in some countries are well supported. I believe Germany's got a lot of club teams supported by their national body, and I guess that's what we're missing. We need Sydney FC to have a team, Melbourne City to have a team around the country where we have this catchment where we can go and look at players and find players. At the moment, we're finding them through advertising, and because of privacy laws, we can't go to the FFA and ask them for a database of every player that they know of, what's ticked the box to say that he's got hearing impairment. That's not allowed, so we've got to find them through advertising. And in recent times, since we've grown our coaching staff, we've got coaches now looking for players. We have found a number of young, talented NPL players, under-18s, under-20s, what we believe will really change our success in the next 5 or 6 years, you know, 5 or 10 years. It's tough, but we are moving forward.
Well, you're doing a wonderful, thing for people with hearing impairment who may decide that sport's not for them, but there's no reason why they can't play it. People like yourself and Robbie, obviously encouraging young people to get active and fulfil their potential in this area. What are some of the benefits that young people or people who play the sport are gaining because they're involved in a team sport and keeping active and all the other great stuff that comes with being part of a national team?
I think that's why we've gone down this path of... So we've gone down a path of simplifying the way we coach. We've gone down a path of coaching through game principles. Of course, when we're going into a tournament and leading up to key games, we still do the more complex tactical approach, you know, if we've analysed the opponent and we need to work on certain aspects of the game. But in the long term, we'd like to go down this path so that we can roll out and bring in more players and even go to communities and schools and be able to teach football. Because recently I was talking with Arsenal Football Schools, and in England they have a program that when refugees come into England, they use football to teach them English language. So we'd like to eventually go down the path of being able to use football to teach sign language. But at the moment, it's not a case that all my staff are going out to learn sign language. We just want to build it through learning through the football, and eventually we'll build our understanding.
Well, James, it's a fantastic program, mate. I'm just learning about it right now with what you've told me about it, so I'll keep an eye on it in the future. Any big tournaments coming up soon?
Yeah, we've got World Cup qualifiers in April, May 2018. So we in Korea. So this is where it gets a little bit tough and challenging for us. At the moment, it's going to cost the players out of their own pocket around $3,500. And then obviously we want to send our best team. So we are looking for support and sponsors and whatever we can get to support them players to go abroad, and the, of course the coaching staff. So it's a bit of a call out to see if there's anyone who has any interest in being involved and supporting us. Unfortunately, when it comes to funding, a lot of the sports funding in Australia is completely down to performance. So even with the deaths, if we're not number three or number four in Asia, then we don't qualify for any funding.
If your story has resonated with people, what can they do to help you out? Is there a website, or is there a number they can ring to offer their support?
Well, I mean, we have Deaf Football Australia Facebook, so they can contact us through the Facebook, or if they get in touch with you guys, maybe you could pass on our details to them. And any support would be. We are looking for long term sponsors and support of the organisation and to help us in many ways. You know, not just financial, but also skill and skill sets, strategic planning, that type of thing, to really continue building the organisation so we can go out to grassroots and start to give back a little bit to the community, the deaf community as well.
Fantastic, James. Like I said, I really feel enhanced now that I know more about Deaf Football Australia. I'm going to keep an eye on your World Cup qualifiers coming up, and of course we'll report on it here in FNR, so just let us know when the planning starts, and we'll follow your journey right through to whatever that takes you by way of World Cup qualifying.
Thank you very much.
That's James Lambert, Technical Director there of Deaf Football Australia. I had a chat to him yesterday and learned a lot about a new type of football. It's been around for a while, but it's amazing how without the promotion, people don't know much about it. But they've got big World Cup qualifiers coming along. If you want to actually support James and Deaf Football Australia, get to their website, and there's a lot of scope for people out there to help out where they can. This is Calcio Cafe here with Carlos Alberto Diego. After the break, we're going to travel down to Tasmania and speak to Alistair Ollington, president of Ulverston Football Club, here on Calcio Cafe, so stick around.
FNR, Football Nation Radio. Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Streaming football 24/7, this is FNR Football Nation Radio. Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego. Coming up on the Calcio Cafe, we've got Sarah Walsh, Fox Sports commentator, talking all things women's football. And, of course, we've got Mike Barrett from a new digital platform that's out there, Sports Host. We'll be speaking to those people coming up very, very soon. But first, let's travel to Tasmania and speak to Alistair Ollington, president of Ulverston Football Club down there in Tassie. Good morning to Alistair.
Good morning, Carlos. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really, really well, mate. It's great to have you on the show. Tell us
Thanks
about Ulverston Football Club. How many players, teams, what competition are you playing in?
Yeah, so Ulverston's a relatively small club down here in Tassie. We have about 340 registered players. They range through from under-8s through to... We had a couple of players this last year that were in their 60s, so we cater for all age groups.
And what sort of history has the club got? Is it a long history, or is it a club that's relatively new?
No, it's a club that's been around for a long time. It was established in 1961, so just over 50 years. In fact, this last season we actually celebrated 50 years involvement for one member.
Fantastic. And is that member still involved? And I'm just wondering whether you generally these clubs start because of families get together and they want to do something for their community. Maybe some of the original people from the you know, first family that started the club, are they still around?
Yeah, so there are some of those still around. And that member that I was talking about is still around as a supporter, and his grandkids and great-grandkids are still playing in the club as well.
That's fantastic, mate. And tell us about the breakdown of teams that you might have. Is there juniors, obviously juniors, but are there senior teams playing in the competitions too?
Yep. So We have both. We actually run the local schools program on behalf of FFT for the Ulverston area. We have around 20 primary school teams that play in a competition that we run from under 8s through to under 12s. And then we also have youth teams, under 14s, under 16s, under 18s, and senior teams as well. Our top team at the moment is our women's team, which is the Women's Super League, which is the statewide league here in Tassie at the moment.
Alistair, I've actually done a little bit of homework on the Tassie, the way they run their the junior football, and I know a lot of the schools actually, whereas around Australia, clubs are as distinct from schools playing the local competitions, but actually schools play as clubs in local competition in Tassie up until a certain age, don't they?
Yeah, that's correct. It depends on which area they're in. There are various junior associations across the state. For us, we run that up to the under 12 age group, and we invite the schools to organise players into teams, and we organise a roster for them and host that at our club.
It's a fantastic model. I just think you want to get more kids playing the game. We know a lot of kids are playing it in schools anyway around Australia. It seems really weird to me that we don't tap into that schools market more like the way the Tasmania have. Tell us about some of the success stories. We saw Nathaniel Atkinson debut for Melbourne City in the A-League on the weekend. We've seen Jeremy Walker come out of Tasmania. David Clarkson all those years ago came out of Tasmania. Any success stories from Ulverston that you might want to talk about?
Yeah, so Jeremy, who you've just mentioned, is actually a former Ulverston player. He actually came up through our development program a number of years ago. So it's good to see him having success on the national stage at the moment. And look, we've had other players that have headed across to Europe and the UK to play in lower divisions over there. But Jeremy's probably the most well-known of those.
So what would you say the strength of your club is? Obviously, you know, I always talk, whenever we talk to clubs all around Australia, we know that they're community hubs. We know that they're vibrant. They mean so much to the community. But tell us about the link you have with your community and the impact and the benefits you might give to your community by just existing the way you are.
Yeah, so for us, we probably serve a slightly wider community than just Ulverston, and we have players coming from as far away as Burnie and Devonport coming to play with us. There are four clubs along the coast, and the four clubs tend to try and work together quite closely to provide football for a variety of ages. Look, in terms of community benefit, just the obvious things, I think, in terms of having a place where kids can come and participate in something that's positive. It's a great social atmosphere. One of the things about the club that I've always loved is that it's very much an inclusive place. You walk in the door, people shake your hand and smile and greet you. And, you know, we're trying to create that sort of an environment where people feel safe and welcome, but they also then have an opportunity to participate in sport to keep them active and have that positive environment in that way as well.
We know that multicultural Australia has always been, a real, almost the genesis of the sport in this country. Tell us about the diversity of the families and the type of players that you might have at your club.
Yeah, so some of the founders at our club certainly have a Dutch heritage, and that was part of the formation of the club, I suppose, in that they came across and wanted to play their game and brought that to our area. At the moment, we're not a terribly diverse area of the country, actually. In fact, I think statistically we're one of the least diverse, but we do have some people involved in the club from the Middle East and from other nations as well at the moment.
And the challenges, obviously, local clubs. I mean, I don't think I've ever spoken to anyone from local clubs anywhere in Australia who said it's all positive and it's all easy going. It's a tough thing when you're relying on volunteers and you don't have a lot of resources. Tell us about the challenges you guys face to put a program out week in, week out.
Yeah, one of the big things we're finding at the moment and have found over the last few years is being a smaller area of the country and a lower population, the number of coaches particularly is quite small. FFT have been working to try and improve that by putting on more programs to train coaches. But the number of coaches is quite small to spread out across the clubs in our area, and getting people that are available to come and coach teams year in, year out is one of the difficulties. And as much as I hate to mention it, the age-old issue of finance, as you mentioned, it's a volunteer club, and being able to find sponsors and raise money To maintain the club is one of the difficult things we face each year.
And you're obviously on the right track. It's a club with a long history, Alistair. It sounds like it's going as well as it always has. Tell us what the vision of the club will be in 10 years' time.
Yeah, so at the moment we're actually working very very much with our junior base. We want to grow that base. It has dropped off over the last few years, and we want to see that expand again. And one of the main reasons for that is that we have a strong feeling that junior base is what actually helps our senior club be strong and healthy. There are opportunities in the next few years. FFT are introducing promotion and relegation to their NPL program, here, men's NPL program and women's NPL programs. So we're hoping that we can not only have a women's state league side, but in the next few years we can also push towards having a men's NPL side as well.
Fantastic, Alistair. Well, you're certainly moving with the times. I hear great things about Alverston Football Club, and obviously you as president have a lot to do with that with your committee and all the volunteers. Congratulations on how it's going, and we'd love to chat to you down the track and see how you're progressing.
Thanks very much.
Good on you, mate. That's Alistair Ollington, president of the Alverston Football Club in Tasmania. Decades old. It's amazing how these clubs survive over that length of time, and actually not only survive, but actually get better and better as years progress. And it's all due to the volunteers. It's all due to the local community. So if you're in that area, make sure you support that club. Next up after the break, we're speaking to Sarah Walsh, Fox Sports commentator and former legendary Matilda. Actually, she's not former legendary Matilda. She is a legendary Matilda on Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego.
FNR, Football Nation Radio. Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. This is FNR Football Nation Radio, Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego. Coming up very, very soon is Mike Barrett, founder of Sports Host, a fantastic digital platform that's partnering Melbourne City at the moment with a fantastic initiative. We'll speak to Mike on that very, very soon. But just now, two W League games will be live and ad break free during play on Fox Sports 501 this weekend. Sydney FC host the Mariners at 5 p.m. on Sunday, and that's followed by Brisbane versus Melbourne City at 4 p.m. on Sunday. And covering it all beautifully, as they do every week, and an integral part of the commentary team there is Sarah Walsh, joining us this morning from Fox Sports. Good morning to you, Sarah.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Oh, I'm really, really well, mate. I've been dying to have a chat to you, Sarah. Been listening to you and watching you on Fox Sports, and you're doing it beautifully at the moment. But what a season so far of the A-League. It seems like any team can beat any team on any particular day.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I think when you look at the ladder, there's a couple surprises. I think given that we're in the middle of the season right now, a lot of teams that finished lower down last year are doing really, really well this year. So, it's just been every round brings a surprise. We had one last week with Newcastle and Brisbane. So, yep.
It's interesting. People talk about that being a surprise. And in other years, in previous years, it would have been a huge surprise. But Newcastle have been pretty good this year. But having said that, Brisbane are just as good as they've ever been. And to lose 3-0 at home, it was a bit of a boil over.
Yeah, it was. I didn't actually get to see the match. But, look, I think Brisbane, with the players that they have, I think they've underperformed the last couple of years, and it's actually been a little bit disappointing with the players that they have. I think when you look at Katrina Gorry, she's had one of the most outstanding seasons she's ever had. Really, really enjoyed watching her play. And I think that Claire Polkinghorne is another player who has... I think she's probably been struggling in around the Matilda squad, but she's really making huge challenges for Stadge this year to get into the squad.
And of course, Tamika Butt's another one who's not only a terrific player and has been for a long, long time, but also scoring for the Matilda. So they've got a bit of a packed, star-studded midfield there. And it was a bit of a surprise that Newcastle did what they did to them on the weekend. But Sydney's the other one that's been a really interesting one. Lost the first three games of the season, very disappointingly for their fans and also for their coaching staff. They've won the last three, and they've done it in style with a real spirited performance.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I went to watch the game against Victory, and I'd been really disappointed with the way that Sydney have played Well, obviously they lost their first couple games, and it was just, it looked like there was not a lack of effort, but a lack of want to, you know, win the challenges and actually do what you need to do to win games, those small things. You could still see little, I guess, glimpses of what we expect from Sydney FC with their ball movement and combination play, but that's all coming together at the right time for them now. Lisa Devana was absolutely amazing last week, and they completely played Victory off the park a couple of weeks ago when I watched them. So it'd be great to see him on, I believe they're Friday night. I have the draw in front of me, but yeah, Friday night, I think I'm calling that game. Against Canberra, so that'll be a really, really good match. Canberra, another team that I think have been a bit up and down.
Yeah, I mean, you played with Heather Garriock too. I mean, everyone I've spoken to have said how much she didn't only expect a lot of herself as a player and also her teammates as a player, but as a coach, she's almost just as tough on her players and herself, and she wouldn't be all that happy with the inconsistent form of Canberra at the moment.
Oh, that you're spot on, because she's, especially with the way that she liked to play, she loved to get a fullback forward. So she was a fullback and loved to get forward. And I think she really wants to bring this attacking style to the team. With the players that they have, I think that it's really easy for them to fall in the trap of going forward and countering every single time and not having some patience on the ball and building up play, building pressure on teams. And I think you look at, they've got Ash Sykes up top with Michelle Heyman, Torsness, who's their new Norwegian striker. They're all, not so much Torsness, but they're all players, when a midfielder looks up to get to play the ball, they're running off and they're not usually checking to build some play. They haven't been able to get their ball makers on the, their playmakers on the ball, like Gracie Maher. So there's a bit of frustration creeping in. But they, you know, they've still been producing results early on. They're still obviously in the mix, but they're definitely going to need to tweak some things, because in past years, I think, you know, if you really just cut out the service to these really quick players up top, they're finding it really hard to create other solutions to go forward. And I think you can see that's frustrating them at the moment. So they're not far off. They just, they need their midfielders on the ball a bit more.
Does the anxiety and frustration kick in more, given that it's only a 14-game season?
Yeah, I think so. I don't remember that much as a player, to be honest, because, you know, your focus isn't any further past the following weekend. But I mean, yeah, you're having different conversations at round 10 rather than you'd prefer to have a round 19 where your team have got a bit more cohesion, you're a bit more, playing a bit more fluid football. Everybody's a little bit fitter, match fit, and especially for some of the players that don't play all year round, or they do within the NPL, but you've got to ask yourself, are those leagues at the level where they need to be for these players to be performing in a 14-week W League? So, you know, for the international players and the Matildas that play overseas, or the other players that go overseas, they're usually in good stead for a 14 round. So it does show, and it'll start to show soon.
Now, Sarah, let's turn our attention to the Matildas. The draw for the Asian Cup in 2018, St Jordan, in April. You know, I mean, I don't know if they stack these draws or not, but it's a pretty tough challenge. We're in the group of death. We've got Japan, 8th in the world, Korean Republic, 15th in the world, and Vietnam, 31st in the world. And, of course, we're 6th in the world. We're probably the highest rank in our group. But the other groups of Jordan, China, Thailand and Philippines doesn't seem as strong. But, you know, these days, our girls just would look at that challenge and say, you know, let's have a crack at it.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I was just thinking a couple of years back, not that we would have been focused on it, but we would have most definitely been thinking we've been given the raw end of the stick, given how highly ranked we are, and wondering how the draw was so lopsided. But to be honest, it's just another challenge to this team. They're going to have to play these teams anyway if they want to win the Asian Cup. And, you know, they don't go into these tournaments now with any other aspiration other to win it. So they're going out to win tournaments, because you need to start actually putting trophies in the draw if you're going to win a Women's World Cup, which is in 2019. So they genuinely believe that they will win that tournament. And I think that's been the shift in this team. They won the awards last night, took out most of the awards. I'm not sure if you watched that. AIS Sports Performance Awards, which was it's pretty amazing when you think about what Richmond FC did in the AFL. There's some really good stories for 2017, but the public just absolutely love this team. And then obviously Stadge with Coach of the Year. You have to take your hat off to him. He's built an environment where he's allowing all these individuals to thrive. I think that's something that he does really well.
Yeah.
And their defensive setup is the best in the world. When teams can finally figure out how to play out of this press, which is going to be awfully hard, they do it so well. We'll have to find other things to think about, but they've been outstanding.
Absolutely, and Sam Kerr again won the award last night, and of course she's the big name in mainstream Australia. You know the Matildas through Sam Kerr, but there's so many other great players in that team. Who else do you love in that Matildas team alongside Sam Kerr that you think, Sam's a big name now, but this player or these players will be as big in the next 12 months or so?
The Ellie Carpenters of the world. I think she's only 16, 17. I'm not even sure if she's 17 yet. She's the way that she, just the confidence she has on the ball. Yeah, sometimes she'll make a few bad decisions on the ball and it's cost us some goals a couple of times. I think given her age, if you just imagine where she could be at 23 or 22, 23 when Sam's age, she plays such an important role at right back for the Matildas. I can just see her being amazing. You know, Kai Simon has another level to go to. I don't think we've seen the best of her yet. And that might sound quite weird. She's been around forever. She's been around for about 10 years, but she's only 26.
Yeah.
And I remember playing some of my best football late 20s, and I can see that, you know, she's really hungry to play. She's been out with injuries for a while. But also Katrina Gorrie. I'm glad you actually brought up that and asked me about other players, because what Sam does, she's actually pushing these individuals to be better. And then she goes another level herself. Caitlin Ford, we don't even touch on her much. She was AFC Player of the Year, was it last year? So I think she's got another four levels to go to. So if this group of players that we're talking about can stick together, stay healthy, if they don't do it in 2019, it most definitely will be the next World Cup. So I've no doubt about that, which hopefully is on home soil.
Oh, Sarah, you're just exciting me with all those names, just watching them during the China series. And the way you guys call it too, it's fantastic. But I love the fact that a lot of the former Matildas like yourself are now in the media talking about the game, and you're doing a wonderful job for Fox Sports. And thanks for joining us today. We hope to speak to you again soon next couple of weeks.
Thank you very much.
Good on you, mate. That's Sarah Walsh, Fox Sports commentator. And don't forget, two W League games will be live and ad break free during play on Fox Sports 501 this weekend. Sydney FC host Mariners at 5 p.m. on Sunday, followed by Brisbane versus Melbourne City at 4 p.m. on Sunday. Let's take a break. This is Calcio Cafe on FNR Football Nation Radio. After the break, we're speaking to Mike Barrett. He's a founder of Sports Host, a really interesting digital platform that we'll have a chat to you about after the break.
FNR, Football Nation Radio. Culture Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Streaming football 24/7, this is FNR Football Nation Radio, Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego. It gives me great pleasure now to have a good mate of mine, a guy that I've known for a long, long time. Mike Barrett's in the studio with us today from Sports Host. Now, Mike, welcome this morning, by the way, nice and early in Melbourne.
Thank you very much for having me, Carlos, and congratulations on this wonderful thing you've built here.
Well,
it's what football fans have been waiting for in this country for a very long time.
Absolutely.
So.
This is a bit of a dream job for me, Mike, speaking football 24/7. So I think you know how much I love the game, and also the Diegos over the years have done a lot of radio in various different places. It's great to have a home in FNR. But thanks for joining us this morning. Of course, you're the co-founder of Sports Host. Tell us about what it is. I mean, I've heard a little bit about it. I'm really excited about this digital platform you come up with. But tell us about it and how does it work?
Well, at its simplest, we've built a website that connects travellers with locals to go and see sport sport around the world. So the most important part of it is it's a free service in that you only pay for your tickets, but really it's about connecting travellers with locals to have a real experience around the world. And we found sport is the easiest way to do that. So football is an obvious one because football is played in every single country, but football is different in every single country. So what we found is it's this great little insight into finding out about a place. So you might be just traveling somewhere for the sake of it, or you might be traveling to the Bernabeu to see Real Madrid. It kind of, it's the full spectrum of reasons for traveling, but what we found is sport is this amazing way to connect with locals, find out about a culture, and yeah, so we've launched in Melbourne now, and it's very exciting.
So I mean, it's a fantastic idea. I just think of myself when I'm travelling. It would have been great to hook up with the locals and for them to show me around and have a few beers after the game. I mean, we all know some of our best times in our lives are the backpacking around Europe and just meeting locals and just hanging out with them for a while and living their life. And it's a great idea to do that through football. What was the inspiration for this?
Well, I guess Darren Walls, who's the founder, he had travelled a lot and sometimes he'd meet locals, sometimes he wouldn't. And he just was looking for a way to, you know, to facilitate that a lot more easily. And sport was it. Sport was kind of the golden goose that he found, that this is this way that it's different everywhere, but it's this, it's never really been framed as like a cultural activity, but there is no quicker way of finding out about a culture than going and sitting, you know, at the MCG or wherever it is, at Old Trafford, and really sitting amongst the people. Because the one thing about sport is you can't be anything but real when you're at a sporting event. So you're just yourself. It's not sitting at dinner and pretending you have a nice conversation or anything. It's raw passion. It's emotion. It's all of these things. So, yeah, so it was really just about finding a nice way to connect with people while you're traveling or while you're at home as well. That's the other big thing is, you know, we don't always have the money to travel, but it's always quite exciting to meet people from different cultures. Mm. And I guess kind of that's where we're at now. You know, we've just announced our partnership with Melbourne City, which is really exciting. And it's something that's really good because, you know, sometimes it's easy in Melbourne to think of the A-League as kind of, oh, it's not the best in the world. So, you know, is it worth sharing? And I can tell you, I've been at nearly every City game this year. And the atmosphere this year has been so much better. And obviously that's helped with results on the park. But you go there and you look at it and we're in the active area and we've taken fans to the active area and we've had, you know, Colombians and Venezuelans there and they see, you know, a few South Americans on the pitch and in the team and they love it. And so, like, again, it's easy to see that in Melbourne, you know, sometimes it's treated as a kind of second-rate thing, but you go there and they absolutely love it. And so, yeah, it's been a really great experience to sort of see people go into that stadium and share their experiences and their passion and, you know, really understand that it is worth sharing. And that for us, that's really important.
Now, of course, you've experienced this from the other end too, by going to Liverpool and then having this experience in the UK.
I have. So I lived in London for 3 years and I went to a Liverpool game about 4 or 5 years ago. And I just went as a tourist. I got tickets online and I went with a friend and it was amazing. It was a dream of mine to always go to Anfield and it was spine tingling when they sang You'll Never Walk Alone. But we were kind of, it was almost like we were watching the fans as well. We weren't in the active, you know, we weren't down the cop end.
Yeah.
So it was an amazing experience. Yeah. Anyway, I got a chance to go back this year and we got in contact with some Liverpool fans and I went along with them. And the difference in experience in going with locals to a game was just mind-blowing. So it was the difference between really being a part of it and kind of just sitting on the outside a bit. So, but it's everywhere you go. I mean, I went to a football game when I was in Cali in Colombia years ago. And it's the quickest way to learn about
it. Alive, and you got out alive.
Amazingly, I did. I lost a finger, but no. But it is. Everywhere you go, sport is this like amazing way. And you meet locals and you talk to people and you learn some chants. So that's the other side of it, is that ability to travel. And then I guess when you're here, you know, we took some Colombians to an AFL game a couple of years ago and they're like, you must come and watch football in my country. It's like this crowd, it's okay, it's all right. don't know about the shape of the ball here.
Yeah.
But, you know, so that's the amazing thing as well, is every traveler who does it, they want to host as soon as they get back home. They want to see the other side of it because they see this and they're like, oh my God, we've got this amazing thing. Yeah. We go to this bar or we eat this food and it's just, it's really cool. And then what happens is after you've hosted a couple of times, as we've had some amazing people here, Daniel and Kit, these Melbourne City supporters, who have hosted for us. And you host a couple of times, and now you've got friends in, you know.
Absolutely.
You've got friends in Colombia. You've got friends in America. You've got friends in France. And so you start building this little global network so that when it's time for you to travel, you've got friends in all these places. And it's just, yeah, it's really inspiring to see.
So tell me how it works with Melbourne City. So if you're a Melbourne City fan out there, or even if you're a Melbourne Victory fan,
I suppose. Yeah.
So tell us how it all works. If people want to be part of this, what do they need to do?
It's not exclusive to City. Look, we partner with City to go through their kind of comms channel. So they sent out a video that we produced through their social media. All you have to do is go to sportshosts.com. So it's sportshosts.com. Jump on there and you can just create a profile very quickly, log in through Facebook or Google. And then we create what is called a game day. So it's about going to the game, but it's about finding a pub beforehand or going for a quick bite to eat or something like that. Sports, this vehicle, it's like the central part, but it's all about, you know, being able to show off your city and do your pre-game rituals. So you go to sportshosts.com, have a look around, and you can see what other game days look like. It takes a couple of minutes to do, but you pick a bar beforehand or say bar TBC.
Yeah.
The big one we're aiming for at the moment is the Derby, and we're really encouraging City fans and Victory fans to get on, sign up. It's amazing what you see when you see these travellers go to a game because, you know, as I said, you know, sometimes it's easy when you've got people like the Herald Sun and what have you telling us that our game's crap. It's not. It's amazing. And it's an amazing atmosphere. Yeah. We went to the first Derby. I think we had about 12 or 15 travellers go in different groups, and they loved it. Yeah. Like, and it's the thing is, it's like, you know, this is what we call this the sporting capital of the world, and this is the world's game in the sporting capital of the world. We've got a Derby now. We've got two teams that are, you know, up and about, and to see it and be a part of it and share it is just something really special. So if you go to sportshosts.com, you can go on there, have a look at what it looks like. We've got some videos of the experience as well, a heap on our YouTube channel, on our Facebook page, so you can kind of get a feel for it. And then we're always available to contact. Because, look, at the moment, we're very young. We're building this as we go. So we're really encouraging people who want to be a part of this. And then, you know, if you take it up early and you want to go travel, we will make that happen. You know, we'll find you locals.
What we'll do is we'll follow your journey here. Mike, I know it's early days for Sports Host, but it's a fantastic concept. You've already got it running. It's already successful in the smaller groups that you've run it in so far, but we cannot wait to see how it unfolds. But thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Carlos.
Good on you, mate. That's Mike Barrett from Sports Host. Make sure you get to sportshost.com.au.
No, just .com.
.com, yeah. And find out how you can be part of this fantastic initiative. And we'll keep an eye on how it's going, and we'll report on it as the weeks and the months and the years progress, and all the opportunities that are out there. That brings Calcio Cafe to an end this morning. You can actually podcast the show on iTunes and SoundCloud.com. So until this time tomorrow, may you have a great day in football.
Culture Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.